The visit with Mr. Eastman early this morning, morning 20th March, 72. Channel 1 over. And beginning of the visit with Mr. Eastman early this Monday morning, the 20th of March, 72. Channel 1 over. And the beginning of the visit with Mr. Eastman early this Monday morning, the 27th of March, 20th of March, 72. Channel 1 over. And beginning of the visit with Mr. Eastman early this Monday morning, the 20th of March, 72.
Why have you on the mind? Well, you said you was getting deaf as a post. She goes to, she found a first-rate ear doctor.
Yeah.
Up there at Gainesville.
She was telling me about it out there.
And two or three times, she just got, she got so she couldn't hear. And, she just looked up on this fella, and, oh, he's pleasant to deal with.
You've seen a lot of spikes. Did you ever see one like that?
Good Lord. Well, why do you know? Why do you know? You didn't pick that up around here. Look at that thing.
My goodness.
See the way that bottom is down there?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what that is. That's special. That's what they call a silo dowel. It goes in for these wooden silos, you know. You take it where your staves run up and down. They take a quarter-inch drill, and they drill right from this center right out, see? Well, then you take and drive this in this way. Is your silo bends this way. You drive it in from the outside, see? And you drive it in that way with that like that, see? And it'll come like this.
Oh!
See, it'll come right around like that in that silo stave. If you put it in the other way, the damn thing will come right around and come right out on the inside the silo.
It just makes a curve.
It makes a curve in there, see? It comes right around just like that. Makes that curve in there. And you know, you take and put, about a dozen of them right along up, well, we say every 2 feet apart, about like that, right up in one of them wooden silos. And geez, the devil can't get it apart.
Is that right?
I mean, look at that again, Mr.
That's a pretty good size nail. Is that 20 penny?
That's what they call a silo dowel.
Is that a 20 penny somewhere along there?
I don't know, but
I never knew anything like that.
Well, they take them right in where the groove is, in, you know, your silo staves are tongue and grooved.
Yeah.
And they take it right in where the groove is in there, and they take electric drill, see? And they drill right out through like that. Well, then you take it from the outside and you drive it in this way. And your other stave, see, hasn't got no hole in it. And this drives right into the wood. See, and that's what holds it.
Mm-hmm. Well?
But you see, by drilling from the inside out, you've got a guide to drive that in on.
Yeah. How about that, friend?
Mm.
Mr. Eastman, you used to just rely on nails altogether, didn't you?
Yeah.
Well, this old lumber's got so bad now.
Huh?
This old lumber is so poor now. You see, I make that shed stay together out there with bolts.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think nails would help it, but hold it.
Well, your bolts are better.
Just one bolt every now and then really stiffens it, doesn't it? Yes.
I've put quite a lot of bolts in, but people, they think it's too expensive.
But why do people always want to economize?
God, I don't know.
And that's not it. It's better to put the best things you've got in.
Huh?
It'd be better to bolt it than to nail it sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but silo staves you can't bolt. See, there's a hook goes around the outside, and you get your hoops tightened up. After you tighten your hoops up, then you take and drive these in.
Oh. Hmm. I'd like to see that.
Yeah.
And you had that when you was in the north. You don't have any use for them down here.
No silos down here now. They tried
about. Well, there are a few around, you know. These people that's got dairies, where they put up silos. They take it down there to that Anthony Farms down there. They've got a number of them down there.
Yeah. Do they use them?
Yeah. Yes.
They use those dirt silos more than anything else. How long have you known Bob Becker?
Probably since around 1955 or 6.
Yeah. Is that when he come down here?
Well, he was down here. I don't know just when he did come down. You see, his father and mother separated, and he come down here. He followed the old man down. The old man come down here and bought up a lot of property for taxes, you know. Got it for a little of nothing. Now he's selling it sky high.
Oh, yeah.
He bought some land over somewhere north of Miami. And they come to put a new road through there. And he bought it for a little of nothing for taxes. They put a new road up through there, and Jesus, that's what made the old man a millionaire.
Oh, the old man is rich.
Yeah.
But he don't live here.
Yeah, he lives right down here. Just the other side of where Mrs. Markham's place is there. On that same side of the road.
You ever see him?
Why, once in a while, yeah. You know, Bob lived down there just west of where Anna Latin lives, right there, just up beyond Becker's, or just beyond Dillon's. And he was over there to that drive-in theater one night, and the house caught on fire and burned up. And the next day or two, I saw the old man Becker, and I says to him, we was talking, I says, Mr. Becker, with all the land that you got around here and the property, haven't you got a house that Bob can move into? Well, now he says, I'll tell you. If he'd have stayed up north there where he belonged with his mother, he says he wouldn't be down here getting burned out.
Is that the way he talks? He likes that money.
Yeah. Geez, he wouldn't do a damn thing for Bob.
Mm.
Bob burned out. Bob had to go and get started all over again.
Huh. Well, is he your, what age man is the old man?
How what?
What age man is he, Mr. Becker?
Well, he just don't do nothing. He just he's kind of an old fellow, you know. He's here about 10 years ago. He run down there to the post office in Orange Lake. And he hit a car right corner ways, and it swung him right around. And he went right into the post office and took the post office window out and broke a lot of the blocks, one thing and another. They had quite a time over that. Well, then it run along a few years, and Jeezy had another automobile accident, so he don't drive a car. And he sold his truck, and they've got just a... well, they've got one of those new... one of them new Lincolns. What do they call them?
No, I don't know, Mr.
A new Lincoln car there, you know, they compare with a Cadillac. I think they call them a Mark IV or something like that.
Oh, you mean old man Becker's got one down?
Yeah. His wife drives that. Yeah, the old fellow, you know, he sold a lot of land to Buddy Huff, right up that road where I live on there. See, up in there, he sold, but Buddy didn't pay much down on it, you know, because the old man rather have the interest on it, see.
Yeah. But he'd live forever, I guess.
He must be 90 or so.
Oh.
What age man is Bob Becker?
Well,
my age?
Bob must be better than 50.
Yeah. So the old man doesn't care what it is. Your family followed him or not?
No. There was another boy come down here, and the old man told him to get the hell back up north.
Yeah.
I think that Bob is the youngest one. Now I think so.
Well, where did he start raising melons and vegetables and all?
Well, I guess off in his old man's place.
Up the country?
No, down here around Orange Lake. I think he was growing them up back of where I live there. He had melons, and then he had eggplant. He had a pile of eggplant down there one time before they started packing it. He's half as big as this house. They brought it down there and put it there. They got a shed on that place that he owns right there in Orange Lake up there just behind Dillon's, just behind Dan Aladdin there. Where Bob bought three of those cabins off in McDougal there when Opal sold him that trailer court. McDougal didn't want no cabins on there, so he sold them to Bob Becker, and I moved them up there on that other place. Well, there's a shed up there that Bob built purpose for a packing shed, see, to pack them eggplant. They had a piece of wax paper about as big as that is square, see, and they'd take each one of them eggplant and do it up in that paper, and then they'd put them in them hampers there. And shipped him north.
He's doing his own packing. Well, how'd he get so many stacked up on him?
Well, I suppose they all... he had a bunch of them in there picking them, you know, and they just took them, picked them, and trucked them there and put them right off in the pile. Until he could get somebody to pack them, don't you see?
Like that, it ruined them. They skin easy, don't
yeah.
they?
Not too easy.
Well, wasn't the packing shed running down that McIntosh then?
I think so.
But he's still doing his own.
You know, there's a lot of them don't like Buddy Huff.
Yeah.
He used to skin the devil out of them, you know. Niggers and one thing
they
or another.
Just a little.
At one time, there was a fellow down there, his name was Walter Nichols. And he had a lot of beans. And Buddy Huff found out about it, and so he sent a fellow down there to see about buying them. And Walter said no, he was going to ship them north to the market up there. And he told him where he was going to ship them, see? The fellow come back and told Buddy, he said, you go down there and buy them damn beans. We don't want him shipping beans up there. Because he says if he ships them up there, then the niggers will find out how much I'm getting for these beans, and I can't buy them. The fellow went back, and he kept coming up from $1.25 a bushel on up. And Walter wanted $3.50. And they were laughing at him to beat all in the beginning. And Walter knew what beans was worth. Well, finally, Huff himself went down, and he bought the beans for $3.50 a bushel. Walter told him, and he told Nichols, he says, don't you dare tell anybody what I'm paying you for these beans, because he says, I'm buying just as good of beans as them are right off from these colored people, he says, for $1.25 a bushel. Now, you see, he was making $2.50 a bushel on them damn beans.
Now, where'd you hear that, Mr. Eastman?
Walter Nichols told me that.
I think I know Walter Nichols.
Yeah, well, poor devil's dead now.
But he was half dead when I knew him.
Yeah.
He had something.
Yeah, he had that emphysema.
Yes, is that what it was? And he bought that place, how would you say where it was?
Well, he bought that place just above me there. Second, about the third place above me.
Oh, is that where he lived?
Well, but when he was raising the beans, I'll tell you what he done. He come down here from New York State. He was a New York State fella. He come down here from Binghamton, New York, and he bought, I think it was 100 acres of land off from the Burry's estate, right up there back of the churches up in Orange Lake. And then he built a house up there, and, well, they called it a barn, but it wasn't just like a shed up there. And he had quite a few cattle, and he set out an orange grove up there. He had, I don't know, 10, 12 acres into oranges. And he turned around and he sold that for $50,000 to Doc Strange. And Strange set out some more oranges up on there. And they had them early oranges. And let's see this. 3 years ago, they got $50,000 clear money out of them oranges. Well, then 2 years ago, they got another big crop. I don't know what they did get out of them. They didn't tell. So then that Ocala Ice and Package Company, they got nuts because he was making so much money out of them oranges. So they come up and they bought that land off of Doc Strange and the boy down there. And I guess they paid plenty for that.
Yeah.
Well, now last fall, they got a big crop of oranges off in that. And they're them early oranges, you know, that they bring the big price on the market. Geez, they was getting $3.50 a bushel for them oranges.
I didn't know that. I didn't know there was such a price as that.
Yeah. Them early ones on the market.
And Nichols, the one that started that grove.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You go past the church, on back up in there,
yeah.
And it's there's a railroad down below it.
Yeah.
I've been up there. And
you didn't go up there to play cards. Jesus. That, up there in that old Nichols place, after Nichols moved out and Doc Strange got it,
uh-huh.
Jesus, they said that young Strange, well, he moved up there and lived there for a little while, you know, and then
yeah.
He moved back into McIntosh, and they used that for a gambling joint up there.
Oh?
Yeah, Jesus, they, and they, The sheriff department got onto it there, and they pinched a lot of them up in there.
Yeah.
So then they went to playing cards down to Bob Becker's garage. Down there, and the sheriff pinched them in there, you know.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. They got young, there was Bob Becker, and, this young druggist here, what was his name?
Hendricks.
Got him in there. They said Hendricks cried. He said, "What's my mama going to say now?" One of the other fellows said, "Well, God, you'd ought to thought about that before you played cards."
And Bob Becker was one of them. Up there in his garage.
Yeah, you hear some funny stories about their playing cards up there. They said they skinned Bob out one night, and all he had left was a roll of Kennedy half dollars. And he lost them. Now he says, them half dollars are worth more than half a dollar. He says, "I'll have some money coming back from that," he says. Yeah, they said Bob would get to stuttering to beat all.
And he'd been farming all the time you knowed him.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, Mr. Eastman, I'd like for you to see that little dirt road where he's got to bring those melons out. You see, it's been full of pools for a long time, you see.
Yeah.
It's not been graded, never had been graded, you see. It's just a little woods road.
Yeah.
And it lays low. And I was up there, that's what made me think of it. I was up there not long ago. And it was just chewed up. And you could tell the first big rain, you just wasn't going to be able to, it going to be chewed up so much that you wouldn't be able to get through there. Now, Bob Becker, I didn't think he'd get into a fix like that. He can put them on a little truck and bring them out, but he's still going to have trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nichols just made money.
Yeah.
Everything he touched
turned into money.
Yes.
Then he went on that world cruise.
World cruise.
Yeah.
The last thing I'd want to do.
He got sick on the ship, you know, and it cost him about $600 hospital bill on the ship.
Oh.
Would you like to light out on a world cruise?
No, I don't want to do that.
Well, I mean, if you just had a whole pile of money and nothing to do with it, would you still like to go on a world cruise?
Yeah. I guess it cost him plenty to go on that cruise.
Yeah. And it took a year.
Yeah, pretty near it.
And that was one of his last years.
Yeah.
He spent on a world cruise.
Yeah.
Looking at Chinamen and one thing or another, Mr. Eastman. I'd rather stay right there in Orange Lake if I had a choice.
Well, then he left Orange Lake, you know, and went down to St. Petersburg to be right next to some emphysema specialist down there.
Yeah. Well, now, that emphysema, it can improve. You know, Miller up there at the service station, when he was running this Shell station up there, he got so he couldn't hardly breathe.
Yeah.
But he quit, he quit smoking and got him an inside job. And he looked
healthy. He's peddling kerosene right now.
Yes. It looks healthy, don't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, he looks healthy. Well, he don't do much of that, you see. Most of the time he's in the, he got an inside job down there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. At that Shell office down there in Ocala. I've seen him down there.
I don't know anything about that. I see him out there peddling kerosene. That's...
I think Mr. Nichols had a little privy house out there one time, a little shed, and he advertised that in the Farm Bulletin, and somebody come up there and give him $25 for it and took it down.
The shed?
Some such thing as that. And he said you'd find someone to pay for anything you had.
Yeah.
Just don't throw it away. Hey, Zeke, you ought to be a trader, Mr. Eastman, and then you wouldn't have to work so hard.
Trader. Well, should you talk about being a trader, you probably see advertised in the paper about that Ray the Trader down there at Ocala.
Yeah.
Sometime you're down in Ocala there and you got a few minutes, you ought to stop in there and just look at the damn junk that he's got in there.
Yeah.
Oh, he's got junk in there, you know, to sell that other people wouldn't think of putting in the fire even.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. People bring it in there and trade it to him.
Well, I suppose so, or he picks it up somewhere. I don't know where he does get it.
Yes.
You know, now, he bought that place right across the road from me there where the taxidermist was.
Yes.
Well, he paid $12,000 for it. And he's asking $35,000.
You see, he don't have to put shingles on anybody's roof, does he? And it was sitting right there where you could have bought it yourself.
Yeah, but they've got, there's some people in there now that rented it with the privilege of buying it. And for $35,000, see? Well, now there was a fellow there the other day looking at it. And this woman that lives in there said that from the talk that she heard between this Ray and this other fella, that this other fella was paying Ray $30,000 cash money for it.
Yeah, cash money.
Well, I don't know where the devil they get that out of a little place like that.
Why, it's just on a little lot.
Yeah.
And a little old house.
Yeah, but it's on 441.
Yeah.
It was a nice, it's a nice little place, isn't it?
Well, it's a nice little place, all right, but geez, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, man. Well, as the fella says, you can't get it unless you ask it.
Yeah. Well, Jan lives right next door to it, you know, just built that new place there a year ago. And he's got that emphysema pretty bad.
Yeah.
And she isn't very good either. And she's in the hospital right now. They're expecting to get her home today. But Jan told me here, oh, about a week ago, that he was talking to the... real estate dealer down there in Ocala. Jeez, I can't think what it is. Rogers. And to see about selling his place so that he could get into Gainesville where the doctors were. And they said, well, they didn't know just what his place would be worth. They'd have to look it over. But they just sold the next place to it. There, for that Jack, I can't think what his last name is. That built that place there. They said they just sold that for him for $12,000. See, well, I know that Jack was asking 15 for it. But he said that he would take less for it. Well, Barnard over there come near buying it. But he didn't. There was some... Barnard was buying it for so much down and so much a month, see? And then this Ray kind of stepped in down there to pay him the cash for it. And Kelly wanted to get out. Jack Kelly, his name was. And Kelly wanted to get out of there and get his money out of it. So he sold it to that Ray the trader for $12,000.
They're moving. They're moving. Your neighborhood is...
Yeah.
Now, Jan, he's not the barber. It's his son.
Jan the barber, this man down there, is father to him.
Yeah, that's his boy.
Yeah.
I think he lives out, right straight out that road, about 10 miles. Way on out there, way past that Shiloh community. I think the boy lives out there.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know him, you see.
Well, I think he does, too, lives out in there somewhere. Well, the old man lived out in there, you know. And he sold the farm out there and come and built that place down there.
Oh, is that what happened?
See, this Jan the barber's mother died. And Jan married this other widow woman. And she was Marsden or something like that.
His first wife died?
Yeah.
That since he come in town there?
Yeah. No, not since he's come there. No, and this other woman there, the woman that he married, had a ranch right out there right next to his.
Oh. Right out there in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, it's a peculiar thing, Mr. Eastman. I never have run into Bob Becker. I had seen that garage of a thing up there, but I thought it was some little two-by-four place.
You ought to look at it in there. That's quite a building in there.
Yeah?
I helped put some of that up. Sure, the fellow that put it up, I stopped there to get some gas. And Bob says to me, he said, did you ever put any of these overhead doors up? And I said, yes, quite a few of them. And he hollered into Grissom, he says, come out here a minute. Grissom was a fellow for putting it up, he's a fellow from Williston. And... he says, here's the man that you want to talk to. He says, this fella here has put up these overhead doors. I says, yes. Well, he says, can you help me put these doors up? He says, I don't know anything about them. Well, I says, I guess I can spare a day or two and help you. I said, I'll help you get started anyway. So I went up, and he had some 2x8s there, and to make a frame, you know, see, to go in there. So I started cutting them 2x8s to put in there for a frame. Put it right in there this way, see. He come and he says, I don't want them that way. He said, I want them that way. All right, what are you going to tack the track on? Well, he says, the blueprint shows them in there flatways. I says, all right. So, geez, I took them out. We put them up edgeways. Come to put the track on, there wasn't nothing to fasten it to. My God, he says, and he rubbed his head. He says, I guess you know more about that, he says, than I thought you did. Now, he says, we put them back the other way. So we put them back the way I had them in the beginning. Jesus, and then we had something to fasten our track to, you know, and put it on.
What was he, just an old country carpenter?
We got the first one up all right. Well, then he wanted me to stay and help him put the other two up. So we got the second one there. We got up and... Jesus, I laughed. We got it all up there, but the tension wasn't just right on it, you know, to hold it up there. So, Jesus, he went and started unturning a set screw, and I hollered at him. I said, Jesus, don't undo that. And he said, why? He said, and you give it another turn. When you give it another turn, Jesus, that spring let go, you know, and that door come down like a thousand of bricks.
Mm.
Jesus, them door panels are heavy, you know. That each one of them panels in there was 12 feet long and 2 feet wide, you see, and it's double metal in there.
Mm.
And Jesus, you know, each one of them, it's all that one man can do to pick it up.
You mean well, just you pick get, it in?
Yeah, yeah, when you take and get 6 of them up there.
Mm.
I'm telling you, that thing come down. And then we had to go to work and start it all over again, you know. Putting that up.
Well, now, you say you helped him do it. he helped you. That's what I say sometimes, Mr. Eastman. I said, I had Mr. Eastman up here helping me with a little plumbing, you see. Well, if there's any help going on, I was helping you.
But you know, that Grissom was a heck of a good mechanic, but he got careless. Yeah, and he used to do a lot of work on lawnmowers and one thing and another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he got his hand under one of them lawnmowers and it took all of his fingers off.
Oh.
I haven't seen him since, but that's what I'm told.
Yeah. He's from Williston. Yeah.
There was a fella up home had the funniest thing with one of them lawnmowers. He lived out of the town there, ways on the farm, and the ditch run through the front of the house there, you know, and you'd have to go like this, see, to mow the lawn up over there like that. He stopped in the Endry store and he bought a brand new pair of them Vac rubber boots, you know, and they had that thick sole on the bottom. Well, geez, he bought them one day, and the next day he come back to the store there with them, and I was in there. And that sole was cut right off, right down under here. And he says, Andy, them damn boots ain't no good. He said, look at the sole on that, how that's come off. Andy said, well, Jesus, them are all guaranteed boots. He said, if they come off like that, we'll give you a new pair. So he went down the cellar and brought him up another pair of boots. Set him down, and the fella says, Andy, how much are they? Why, Andy says, they ain't none. Them boots are all guaranteed. Well, he says, there isn't nothing guaranteed about the boot. Now, he says, you look at that close, he says, and I'll tell you what happened to it. He says, I was out there and mowing the lawn, he says, and I come up like that and I slipped. He says, and I stuck my foot right under that lawnmower. And you know, that blade of that lawnmower come right down and under his foot, see? And it went right and under his foot and cut that sole right off, never touched his foot. Now that's almost unbelievable, but you just, I see the boots.
You look at them yourself.
Yeah, and you could see where that blade had hit in different spots on there, see, as it went under there. See, because it'd be a ragged cut. That was the narrowest escape that I ever see. You hear lots of people getting their feet in under them and one thing and another. And here's Opal. Lives right back of me there. She was running one of them lawnmowers out there, and she hit one of these coat hangers. Jesus, that coat hanger come around down, it hit her in the leg, you know, and it took the hide right off in her leg and skinned her leg up to beat all.
Yep, them little lawnmowers just a bear cat.
Yeah.
They'll eat you up. Why don't people realize what they got in their hands?
Jesus, I don't know.
Why, you know, I wouldn't get close to one of them.
Jesus, I've hit stones before now, and that damn thing would fly. And I'll tell you another thing that I know that'll sting like the devil, because I've had them hit me. You take these hickory nuts.
Oh.
You know, the hickory nuts down here are bigger, and they're hard shell, you know, thick, hard shell.
Yeah, but nothing in them.
I'm telling you, boy, when one of them hits you, you know you've been hit. I was over to Dillon's one day, and he was mowing out there, and there's quite a few of them nuts around there. Jesus, one of them come out from under there and hit me. And I'm telling you, that thing really hurt.
Yes, you don't have to be mowing yourself.
No.
You just walk by.
Yeah.
Yes. You see, I wouldn't use one of them, Mr. Eastman. I use that old tractor mower. And I set up pretty well off of it, you see. And it's bad enough. It ain't foolproof, is it?
Well, I had a funny one. I was mowing up to my neighbor's there last summer. All at once, the tractor or the mower hit something and it white and it flew, you know. And I went over to see what it was. You know, I'd lost the damn cap off my gasoline tank. And that's what, it went down and under that, you know. And that hit that and cut it right in two.
Yeah.
Woo.
Mr. Eastman, let me tell you, this, did you see much of old Nichols when he was down there?
Oh, I didn't see too much of him, no. I done a little work for him once in a while.
Yeah. He bought up some houses to rent.
Yes, I know he did.
And one thing another. How long was he down there?
Well, I don't know that.
He down there a good number of years, wasn't he?
Yes. He come down around, I guess around 1950.
Yeah.
Somewhere right around there.
I saw him after he had sold that place over there to Dr. Strange. And he he let him have all of his equipment. And he had a nice little farmall tractor.
Yeah.
With every piece of equipment to go with it.
Yeah.
He used it for a long time, but he took care of it. And this boy, you remember that?
Yeah.
This boy wasn't interested in that old stuff, and he just sold it in the ditch and bought him a brand new Ford and the equipment to go with it. And it looked like it just hurt Mr. Nichols.
Yeah,
it just hurt him.
Yeah, it did.
It just hurt him, just the idea of it, you know.
Yeah. Well, Nichols went over to Anthony. There was a fellow over there that come down from New York. I think that Nichols knew him. I don't know for sure, but I think so. But anyway, this fellow's wife died, and he wanted to go back to New York. Well, he had that little place over in Anthony. And Nichols bought it, I think, for $4,000. We went over there and we built a little porch on it there. It didn't cost too much money. And I put a little extra wiring in the house. And you know, he turned around and sold that for $8,000. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
He paid $4,000 and sold it for $8,000. And all he done is put on that little porch on there. Probably cost him maybe a couple $100.
Yeah.
Because, hell, they wasn't mounted to the porch. There was just a couple of posts up there. And I'll tell you what he put up there for posts was he got them off of somebody. These palm trunks.
Oh.
You know, about that big around.
Yeah.
Sure, we just took and set a couple of them up there and put a roof over it, and that made a porch. Yeah.
That lasted a long time, I guess.
Some people are just that lucky, you know.
Yeah. Just get away with it. And they don't put, there's no effort to them. They just do it. Miss Eastman, we were talking about them house trailers. Where was that trailer that where you put in the washer?
Where I took out the cardboard floor?
Yeah.
Hargett had it.
Oh, it was down there in his court.
Yeah. He bought it off and Doc geez, I can't think of his name now. The fellow that built the Trade Winds restaurant down there.
Yeah.
Fortner. Doc Fortner. See, he sold the Trade Winds and he bought that trailer and put it up on the lake over here.
He gonna fish?
Yeah, I had a fish camp over there.
Yeah. Now that had a they put masonite over the steel foundation.
Yeah, and had little short bolts just about that long, you know, that went through the masonite and through that frame, see?
Yeah.
Long, and that's all that held it. And then they took and glued that...
Homosote.
Either homosote or Sellotex.
Sellotex.
One or the other right on the top of it, see?
How thick was that?
That's half inch.
Yeah.
See that? And then your masonite there was quarter, and then that there was a... half inch. I made 3/4.
Yeah.
Well, then they took and glued that cardboard on the top of that. You see, that made it stiff.
Yes.
So that was all over there like that, just that cardboard. Well, then they go and they put a 2x2 right on the top of that cardboard, just like that, and then they set the studs right on there.
Yeah.
Now, all it holds, the outside of that, is just that cardboard in there, see? Your masonite and your other stuff wouldn't hold much, you know, because it'd be just about like that.
Yes.
But you see, you're 3 inches of cardboard on there with your corrugations running up and down. Makes it quite stiff.
Yeah.
And that's all that held that outside up. And then your partitions, goes across there, see, well, then they would go across the framework under there, and that would help support it. That's about the cheapest construction that I ever saw put up.
And it was all right, at least it would hold until it got wet.
Yeah.
And then they put the washer on the...
Yeah, the washer was right under the sink.
On the outside?
No, right on the inside the house, right side of the sink. It'd be just like taking them two drawers, or them two doors right out of there and putting this washer right back in there.
Right next to the sink.
Yeah.
And when it overflowed,
well, it just went all over the floor, see? And when that went on the floor, well, then it just soaked that right up.
Yeah.
And that, yeah.
And you take and walk in there onto it, you know, and Jesus, it'd be just like walking like that. See, your tile would just give just like that.
Yeah. Well, how about that thing?
Oh.
And you see the outlet of your clothes washer in under there. You just come up a pipe like that, and there was a open pipe on the top where your drain from your sink went in. See? Just had a T on there and a pipe up, and this other was just that crook of that automatic washer just went right into that.
Yes.
Well, if anything happened to your sink...
Nuts.
Got plugged up anywhere at all.
Yeah.
Well, that would just come right into it.
Yeah. I want to ask you a question.
Hey there. We're just still living. Yeah.
Just a minute. I want to ask you a question.
It's called. Oh, yeah.
He'll be through in a minute.
Yeah.
I had a. Oh, he'll be through.
Oh.
I gotta get some orange juice. Out.
All right. Well, you take care of David, and then come out here anytime you want to. Well, the girl's been sick, and they went home, and she's been sick and got to go to the doctor. That's the boy that was out here that afternoon. He's plowing.
Oh, yeah?
He going to school up there. You can't put any dependence in him. There's always something comes up, you
mm-hmm.
see. That interferes. Always something.
Oh, I didn't know when I first see him out here. I didn't know maybe he was married to that girl that was out here.
Well, he brought a little wife. His wife works for the dentist.
Oh.
Yes, and she'd been out here, but I don't. She just came out here. You weren't here when she came.
Mr. Eastman, I almost didn't get that valve cut off. I went in down here to this Macintosh store.
Yeah.
Are they sort of hard to deal with?
Oh, I don't know why.
I went in. Is that tall fella Mr. Reddick?
Yeah.
With his hands this big?
I said I came for what Mr. Eastman ordered. He looked at me and he said, "You hadn't called." I said, "Well, I think he has." He said, "He hadn't had any call from you," and he went on about his business. He just walked away.
Yeah?
And his little boy was there, and I said to the little boy, "Let's look around and see if there's a note somewhere." And the little boy said, he found a note on by the telephone, but didn't have your name on it.
Yeah.
So, he said maybe this is it, but he didn't know, so he made a call to somebody else. And they found out that that was from you.
Well, the other fella that
other
worked
fella.
There.
Yeah.
But Mr. Reddick didn't pay me any attention. The little boy started looking for the cutoff, and he couldn't find it. He's a nice little boy. The other fella came in, and he couldn't find a 3/4 inch. And he said, "Geez, he told you he'd found one." And he didn't have one. But Mr. Reddick never did pay any attention.
I don't know. He's kind of a funny guy, you know. He's lousy with money, and he don't give a doggone for nothing. Now, you know, them two fellas went in there, they're brother-in-laws, see?
Oh.
The other fella is brother to Reddick's wife. She was a Dorrimeyer. Well, this Dorrimeyer has bought that turnip seed place right there next to the old drugstore. And he's the one that built this, had the head goings of building this place for Reddick up here, the Micanopy. You know,
who?
You know
brother-in-law?
Huh?
Who is?
Well, Reddick lives up here by Micanopy now, where that big fence is around up there. And they built all them buildings back in there.
Who is the boss of it?
Dorrimeyer. Reddick's brother-in-law.
Yes,
see, they
yes.
they was in the
yes.
hardware store together. Well, Reddick has bought Dorrimeyer out, and Dorrimeyer's going back doing carpenter work.
Yeah.
As Reddick says to me, he says, "I can stand it." He says, "If I don't make a nickel out of the hardware business," he says, "but Dorrimeyer," he says, "he'd starve to death." So he says he's going back to carpenter work. But, Dorrimeyer told me, you know, this Reddick's mother just died here, well, just before Christmas. And he says that, that she left Reddick $75,000 to play with.
Yeah.
And he had a lot of money before that, you know, and he's just one of them fellas just like Nichols. He'd take him by a place, you know, and he didn't double his money on it there in just no time at all. Now, he bought that, you know, where Stoughton built that beauty shop down there just above the store?
Yeah.
Well, Reddick bought that. I don't know what he paid for it. But he turned around and sold that and made $2,000 on it.
Yeah.
The people that bought that from the university up there. Their name is Cake, C-A-K-E.
Yeah.
Cake.
That's a deal.
Well, he didn't pay me any attention until I got on the telephone.
He told you to call. The other man did.
No, the other man. Yeah. I said, you suppose...
Dormeyer.
I said, you suppose Johnny Palmer will have this? Mr. Eastman, I was in the store 30 minutes. A little boy's trying to find it, and Dormeyer's trying to find it, and finally they couldn't, said they didn't have it. That's 30 minutes. All the time, Mr. Reddick was not paying me a mind. So I got on the telephone, and I was talking mighty big by then, and I got Mr. Palmer on the telephone. I said, Johnny Palmer, have you got this cut off? He said, yep. I said, if I drive all the way down there after waiting around in this store for 30 minutes and you don't have it, I'm going to be mad. And Mr. Reddick heard me talk that way. I said, I've been fiddling around here 30 minutes and I'm in a hurry. And Mr. Palmer says, I'll have it right here by you by my side. So when I said, have you got a coupler? And I said, I've got a coupler. And so when I went over to pay, I bought the union at...
Yeah.
When I went over to pay, Mr. Reddick was standing there. He said, do you want a union or a coupler? I said, hell, Mr. Reddick, I don't know what I want for this time. Men ought not to send their wives after things. And that's when he laughed. Oh, he laughed big and said, that's when we could learn something. I was glad to see him laugh. He said, you know what you got in your hand there? And I said, no. He said, that's a union. He said, you were talking to Mr. Palmer about a coupler. I said, well, Mr. Palmer will know the difference. So when I got down to Mr. Palmer's, he was sitting there with that red thing, right, eating a sandwich.
Sandwich one hand, that coupler in the other.
And I said, Mr. Palmer, this thing's cost too much. I've been looking at one that cost $1.50. There's a lot of difference in the price.
Oh, yeah.
What makes that?
Well, you get what you pay for.
That's right.
What he said, huh?
And he gave me a little cutoff on the price because he said I had to come all the way after it.
Tell him what happened.
I said, I just been looking at one for $1.50.
Yeah.
And Johnny Palmer handed it to me, and I said, why, Mr. Palmer, this thing's $3.45. He said, you get what you pay for. I said, well, I don't want a gold-plated one. I handed him a $5 bill. He handed me back $3.
Yeah.
Now, how'd he do that, Mr. Eastman?
Johnny's a good boy. Yeah. I was working down there, and I went to cut some wire off there, and I had my jackknife out. It was an old jackknife, what I used to scraping wire and one thing another with, you know. Johnny looked at it, and he said, you call that a jackknife? I said, yes. Jeez, he turned right around, and he walked down there behind the counter there someplace, came back with a box that had this damn nice jackknife in it. The box had $3.50. He says, he took it out and opened it up, and he said, that feels pretty good. Now, he said, you put this in your pocket, he said, when you want to use a jackknife. And he put that in my pocket. It was about right in the box, you know.
Well, now, that was something. That's at 3:45, and Faye gave him the $5 bill, and he gave us $3 back.
Yeah.
Now, how'd he do that, Mr. Eastman?
I don't know.
He just had a little fun.
He probably charged that up to profit and loss. Be like Johnny putting up the television antenna down there, you know. He told a woman he'd put it up for $100, and geez, it cost him about $130. Then I had to go back and put another guy wire onto it. John wanted to pay me for that, and I said, no, John, we let that go. Geez, he said, I lost $30 on the damn deal now. Well, geez, if we don't get out of
there. Before you go, that bathroom, the tub in there, it got so the water won't even come out of it. Won't come out of it enough to.
The water won't come out of it.
It ain't coming out much. So we just going to have to put a new one on.
Yeah.
Well, what do you ask for?
Can you get
it from Mr.
Palmer? You get what they call a tub filler with a shower.
Can you get it from Mr. Palmer? Let's see if he's got it.
Well, you better see.
They're asking if you got a tub filler with a shower.
I'll let you ask if I can find his number.
Tub filler with a shower.
Be here. He's on his way. I'd like to work on that Mr. Palmer's store for a while. Just see some of that stuff, ever some of them things that goes on down there. Mr. Palmer, this is Guy Miles. Here's your friend, Mr. Eastman.
Hello, John. Say, you got a tub filler with a shower?
Contractor, that telephone contractor put on.
Put that right on there.
Yeah. He put that on to make up for me for all this foolishness I've taken off that telephone company. And you know it's handy.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. I wouldn't be without it.